Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Interview Cast. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I'm back on the podcasting airwaves. I want to thank everybody for all your support and understanding. I had to take a couple of weeks away. It's funny, I've been doing this since 2012, and I don't think I've ever taken 2 full weeks off. I'm sure everyone knows why. The Undertaker tour was very difficult on me. We found out that we were not going to be able to do the Q&A with him, and then it was just the meet and greet. So then we tried to bring in Mick Foley, and we were able to do that, and then we thought the show might be getting pulled, and we had to fight to keep it, and it's a whole thing. I'm going to get into it a little bit with our guest today, but to be honest, it just got to a point where it felt like every time I would work really hard to try and get, you know, above the parapet and just kind of get my head out the hole, two other things would happen. And like, there's some people on Twitter were saying stuff, and I totally get it. Like, I've never said that customers can't be annoyed or can't be upset or anything like that. You know, I totally appreciate if you buy something from us, you're within your right to be upset when things change. But I do believe that we did the best that we could with the situation that we had, and I stand by it. So that's kind of where that is. You know, there was some funny comparisons about Fyre Festival. And then I think, to be honest, and this probably sounds harsh, I think there's people who just don't get it. Like, if you genuinely think that we didn't want The Undertaker or we didn't have a signed contract or anything like that, then you're an idiot, really. And that's just the truth of it. Because if you know us and you've been to our events, you know that we really pride ourselves on being able to deliver. And we have worked as hard as we can, you know, to deliver these events, and we did deliver them last week. It was the most stressful thing I've ever done, but it's over, and I'm very happy that it's over. Mick Foley was our knight in shining armor. I cannot thank him enough for stepping in. He did a full 3-hour meet and greet during the Undertaker meet and greet for free. I don't know anybody else that would do that, so I want to thank Mick Foley. I'm looking forward to getting back to talking about wrestling again. That's going to be exciting. And we're also, on this episode, going to talk about the secret that is finally broken. Inside the Ropes is going to StarCast in Las Vegas, which is very exciting. Which brings me to our guest. I felt like the first time I came back in podcast, the best way to do it would be to bring in the one man that kind of understands my recent plight, and that is Conrad Thompson, the man behind the podcast Something to Wrestle With and 83 Weeks and What Happened When, and now grilling JR with Jim Ross. Conrad, obviously, the man who came up with StarCast, it was the accompaniment to All In last September. Now he's the guy behind StarCast 2. It's going to be attached. I don't know if we're allowed to say attached. It's running alongside AEW's Double or Nothing. See, I wanted to get him on the show. We've got Conrad for over an hour, and it's a fun chat. It doesn't feel like an interview. It feels just more like we're, you know, we've kind of been friends for a while, but not really got a chance to spend a lot of time together or chat together. So this was the first time that we've got a chance to really talk for a long period of time. I think it's really good. We go into some detail about the Undertaker stuff. I think people are going to really be interested in hearing. So that's pretty much it. Thank you, everybody. If you are somebody who came to the Rise of the Taker Tales from Hell tour, or you didn't come, what I will tell you is our team are working round the clock. They're working as much as they can on refunds. People are asking why it takes so long to do refunds. We're having to manually process every single refund, and we're a small company with small amounts of manpower. It's me and one other person that are doing this. So I've been doing it today. Like, I was doing it all last week. I've been doing it all today. The only days off that I took from doing it were the days we were on tour. That is it. And for those of you who came, we are going to be sending you out a print and a pin. We weren't able to send you out the ones that we had because we were told we couldn't. Another thing to shackle us at the last second. But we are going to send that stuff, some stuff out this week. So please bear with us on that a little bit. But yeah, so I'm going to try and get back to normality. I'm going to be back on Wednesday with Sondra for the Inside the Ropes podcast, back on Thursday on Patreon, Friday main feed with Finn for the Power Slam podcast. David and I are going to do an Over to You this week. And then before you know it, next weekend, it's Money in the Bank. So, and then the weekend after that, it's Double or Nothing. So there's a lot going on in May. I'm glad to be back. I feel better. I feel kind of rejuvenated, to be honest. I feel like taking a few weeks off has done me good. I've not watched Raw or SmackDown since the Superstar Shakeup. And That's a pretty interesting sign, because I'm usually the guy who's like, you know, I always keep up with it, and it's not been grabbing me. So I don't know what that says. Well, I do think I know what it says, but you can read between the lines. So AEW seems to be coming at the best time possible, because hopefully it's going to give a kick up the arse to the creative team in WWE, or to the heads of the creative that are going to be ones making the decisions. Not really feeling the Money in the Bank card right now. Yeah, just you know, I think last year when Braun Strowman ended up losing his Money in the Bank briefcase in a no contest, the stipulation just doesn't feel like it means much to me anymore. I don't know if I'm alone in that. Maybe I am, maybe I'm not. I'm talking to myself, so I don't really know. But anyway, I'll have a conversation with Sondra and Finn later on this week, or Sondra or Finn. Patreon, we're going to be doing more stuff with that, and I know that's fallen a little bit behind, I apologise. We've got some $50 podcasts we need to catch up with. Sondra and I need to catch up on the NXT Yellow Ropes Forever, Finn and I on Retro Heat, and a ton of other stuff. So we are going to get on it. I'm going to be back. I appreciate all your support. Everybody who's reached out to me, it's a lot. And, you know, at the shows, people were giving me thank you cards and pets at home shopping vouchers for Hulk and stuff, which was just, you guys are the best. So I really appreciate it. So yeah, without further ado, though, here is the man behind all the wrestling podcasts that you love that are not Inside the Ropes, and the man who somehow has a full-time job running a mortgage company and does 4 podcasts and has a marriage and seems to still have time to hang out. Don't know how he does it. Here's Conrad Thompson, everybody.
Welcome to Something to Wrestle With.
Something to wrestle with.
Bruce Pritchard.
Bruce Pritchard.
Well, you know.
That's not a rib.
She pooted.
She pooted.
What a rib.
No, you have a meal.
There's no box of gimmicks.
Rumor and innuendo.
I don't deal in rumor and innuendo.
And
was he there?
I was there.
Say something about
I don't. Give a shit. I ain't scared.
I ain't scared of shit.
Fuck him.
Fuck you, Bruce.
I love you.
You take the cheese.
Double cheeseburger.
You take the bread.
Double cheese.
Well, you know.
And then
double mayo.
You know, it's called chicken salad.
Double onion, motherfucker.
You're nothing but an egg-sucking dog.
Throw in your Google machine.
Goddamn, kid.
Goddamn it.
What the hell show you got there?
I need more.
What say you?
Pronouns, pal.
And now, something to wrestle with. Con Bruce Pritchard.
Eek, the second most recognizable athlete in the entire world today.
Conrad Thompson.
What happened when?
Huh?
What would Vince say about that?
Well, hey, Vince.
Tell me, yeah.
My shorts look good tonight.
Yeah.
They're so big.
Yeah.
That's good.
Bullshit.
Welcome. To WrestleMania.
World title now.
Welcome to Something to Wrestle With.
Something to wrestle,
something to wrestle with.
Something to wrestle with.
Something to wrestle with.
Dig it!
Bruce Pritchard.
And we're back here on Inside the Ropes. I've been off for podcasting for 2 weeks for an obvious fucking reason, but I've got someone here with me who's maybe the only person on the planet who can understand what I went through, and that is the king of podcasting, the king of putting on large-scale professional wrestling conventions, Conrad Thompson. Conrad, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. It's been ages that we've kind of like ducked and died, but we're finally on a podcast together in some way, shape, or form. It's cool.
It's weird. I've ran across you 38 times in real life, but we've never had more than 10 minutes together, and now it's finally happening. It's worlds colliding.
Yeah. Now I can finally like not be paranoid, not think you're avoiding me. Now I can be like, we're now firm friends. You can't get out of it now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think a lot of people think I'm avoiding them, but as you can attest, I have signed up for too much. I have bit off more than I can chew. I am busier than a one-armed paper hanger. So my apologies to anyone listening to this who also thought I was avoiding them. That's not the case.
Well, yeah, I mean, you do a ton of stuff. We are going to talk about the big old elephant in the room in just a minute. But before we do, I've got to ask you, because StarCast, the initial one, like went so well. Really, you know, like, because there was so much going on and like everybody raved about it. There was a really good mix of events. I bought it on Fight TV and I don't really buy stuff anymore. Like, so I was like, I'm going to buy it. It was really good. But you were like doing stuff afterwards saying, I'm not doing it again. Like, I'm not doing it again. And now you're doing it again. So when did you finally realize, okay, I'm just going to do it again?
Well, me saying I was never going to do it again was based on the idea that realistically, Cody and the Bucks are never going to do a show again. I mean, I think a lot of people, myself included, assumed, well, they're going to go sign with WWE when their contracts are up. And that didn't happen. So at the end of StarCast, I would have never predicted that they were going to do All Elite Wrestling. I mean, I knew a little bit. I knew that, you know, Tony Khan was a big wrestling fan, and I knew that he was thinking about maybe potentially doing something, but nobody had signed anything. And we had heard all these rumors for years and years that, oh, there's going to be a new player in the game. Nobody could have predicted All Elite Wrestling. And I even knew Tony, and I didn't think that was going to really be a thing. I thought it was just a fun, hey, what if type of deal. But when it became apparent, oh no, they're doing it. And Cody, you know, texted or called or whatever and said, hey man, we're thinking about doing a big show. What about Las Vegas? You want to do StarCast? I jumped at the chance, and I jumped at the chance because I left Chicago with 5 pages of notes of things that I would have done differently. Like everybody else was having fun and was saying what you were saying and, oh, it was great. And it was the best and blah, blah, blah. All I could see were areas of improvement. So where everyone else was happy, I walked around thinking, boy, I really messed up X, Y, Z. And this is an opportunity for me to try to fix that. And so I've become fixated on the things that I didn't think we did well at the first StarCast. We will do those well this time. So this is about, you know, me having another chance to do it. And I wanted to do it bigger and I wanted to do it better. And I've done my best to bring out a bunch of unique experiences, stuff nobody's done before. And I'm pretty excited about it.
I feel you're quite similar to me in the sense of like, we like to do quality. Like quality is quite an important thing. Because like sometimes you go to stuff and like you just go, is this real? Like, is this the real level of quality this is? So like, I feel your pain in that. I mean, you do it 100 million times bigger than I did. But I guess that my question would be, because we'll get into the Undertaker thing in a second. But I mean, so you announced StarCast 2, you're doing it, all that kind of stuff. And then Bruce goes back to WWE. So how do you find out about it? And I guess the question that everyone kind of wants to know is that, you know, you guys are not doing live shows anymore, but you're still doing the podcast. Do you think that is a long-term thing that is going to be able to happen given some of the political stuff that can go on? And just talk about how that process happened.
Yeah, I do think the podcast will continue. And I don't mean to be ugly, but realistically, would Bruce be back with WWE without the podcast? I don't think so. You know, people had sort of made their mind up about Bruce a long time ago, and it wasn't fair. It wasn't honest. It wasn't true. And it took the podcast sort of coming into its own and becoming a thing for people to realize, damn, Bruce really knows what's going on. And slowly but surely he got pulled back into the wrestling business because wrestling was firmly in his rearview mirror. And through the podcast, he rediscovered his love of wrestling and wrestling rediscovered its love of Bruce. And I'm glad that he's back. And I knew that, you know, he had been visiting with Vince a couple of times here or there. And I knew their relationship was sort of rekindling, and I knew that he was going to be doing a consulting gig with the company, and I knew that this was the natural progression. And no, I don't have any doubt that the podcast will continue. I feel like it will. I think it's an asset to WWE. I feel like we're really one of the biggest pieces of advertising that they do. You know, hundreds of thousands of people listen to Something to Wrestle every single week. And then what do? They go watch it on the network. That's the reason we got the deal with the WWE network. They could see these random spikes. Like, wait a minute, why is everybody watching this random show from 1997 all of a sudden? It's not an anniversary show. It's not something we've talked about on TV. It's not something we've pushed through our social. What's going on here? And they found the pattern. Oh my gosh, it's Something to Wrestle. So no, I think it goes the other way. I think we'll do more with WWE, not less.
So based on that, so I don't want to go too far into the behind the scenes stuff, but I mean, we were kind of in a similar spot where we booked Undertaker for these Q&A and meet and greet opportunities. You booked him for StarCast. Now, this is something, was Taker with StarCast always going to be purely a meet and greet, or was there going to be a Q&A as well?
We kicked around both. It originally started as just a meet and greet. And then we talked about, hey, we'll do a meet and greet and a stage show. And then we wound up on just a meet and greet. And the reason we wound up on just a meet and greet is they were charging a crazy amount of money per hour, as you know. And when I say that, I don't mean WWE. I mean, Get Engaged Media. I feel like that for whatever reason, WWE has gotten a bad rap in this entire situation. the people who made the deal with me was not WWE. It was Get Engaged Media. I want to make sure everybody's clear about that. Ben specifically. So, hey, Ben, if you're listening. Anyway, the deal was they were charging a crazy amount per hour. That number's been out there. Everybody knows it. And I wanted to do a stage show. And they had some hesitation to do a stage show. They wanted to know what would it be about, what would it look like, what would it feel like, who would be the co-host. And I said, well, you could pick the co-host. How about this guy, or this guy? And one of those guys was Bruce Pritchard. And I knew that that would get his attention because they're friends in real life, Undertaker and Bruce Pritchard. So sure enough, Undertaker approved Bruce Pritchard, and we were off to the races. Well, then they introduced the wrinkle of, now you can't record it, you can't film it, you can't air it. Well, if I can't air it, that sort of goes against what I'm doing with StarCast on Fight. All my panels are on Fight. The only way something's not on Fight is if we're screening a movie we don't own. So like Joey Ryan's documentary, or, we're not going to screen the Kenny Omega documentary. Like, those are properties that have other lives that need to exist in different places that can't be on Fight. I get that. But if there's a panel with The Undertaker talking, I've got to put that on Fight. And if I can't, then it makes more sense to me not do it and just add that hour, take it off the stage and put that hour back into meet and greets. So that was the plan. 3-hour meet and greet is what we had signed up for at the end.
And I get, from my, because I think one of the things that I got a lot of feedback asking, and I'm like, I'm very reluctant to, because I always feel sometimes like if somebody asks you a question and you answer it, you're going down a rabbit hole of having to tell them every single thing that happened and every part of it. But one thing that came back was like, why didn't you guys sign a contract? It's like, well, obviously we signed a contract. Like, we wouldn't get into this and announce something if we didn't sign a contract. But for us anyway, it was, we get to late February, and I don't know whether WWE just all of a sudden realized that he was doing Q&As or how it came about, but the Q&As were off the table. And then the meet and greets were off the table. And then it was just this whole thing that spiraled. And, because the thing is, you guys announced recently when you did the interview with CBS Sports that Taker was no longer happening. So when did you find out Taker's now completely off the table?
I forget the date, but I just remember that, they weren't happy about it, they being WWE. And there was some back and forth. And I think the hurt feelings, if that's even the right phrase, is that the booking happened around the office. Like, we didn't call Stamford, Connecticut to make the booking. But the reality is Undertaker's bio on social media actively marketed, hey, if you'd like to book the Undertaker for an appearance, contact Get Engaged Media here. So I did that. Even when there was a text message exchange with Undertaker, it was, hey, talk to Get Engaged Media. Here's Ben. So there you go. So I was always under the impression, because of my 1-degree separation relation with WWE, that there's going to be some sort of, make good. Okay, well, we've got to frame it this way. We've got to position it this way. You've got to book it through the office. We've got to add a charity component. I don't know, but there will be something different about this deal, but it'll still happen. And then once that became apparent that it wasn't happening, they said, now listen, we'll get you a suitable replacement. And I almost laughed at that idea. Like, well, what's a suitable replacement for the Undertaker? And that's exactly what I said. And, I did try to frame it as, hey man, we could do, a fundraising thing. Cause here's the thing. I got a little bit of heat on that online, and I said, hey, we'll do it for Connor's Cure. But realistically, when Greg the Hammer Valentine is coming to your convention, he's coming for the payday. I'm not disparaging anyone. That's the way the business works. Like, you make personal appearances in exchange for money. Realistically, is Vince McMahon going to make a personal appearance for money? No, that's insane. Now, if it can take a negative, because there's going to be some backlash about Undertaker not being here, and the heat's going to go on WWE, whether it deserves to be there or not, that, oh, they pulled Undertaker. We can turn this negative, this sort of black mark, this black eye on, oh, how petty is WWE, which is what everyone's saying now, and turn it into a positive, and turn it into, hey man, they did something cool. Vince McMahon showed up and they donated a boatload of cash to Connor's Cure. And that was my pitch. That we would eliminate the autographs, just line up a bunch of photos, whatever fans paid, we would donate to Connor's Cure. I would match it. And if WWE matched it, it would be an incredible 6-figure sum that we could donate. And we turn a negative into a positive and fans get a once in a lifetime experience. Of course, they didn't want to do that. So Here we are.
So, I mean, is there going to be any form of replacement now, or is it just a case of the deal's off the table and you're off to the races with everything else that you're doing?
They offered me Sting, Ric Flair, and Eric Bischoff. I told them I had all of them. And then they said, what about APA and Sting? And I said, I already have Ron Simmons and I have Sting. So what else? And then I asked for Shawn Michaels. And I originally had Shawn, but Shawn pulled out because he didn't think he could do it because it was too closely associated with AEW. But my original plan was for on Saturday, when there would be no AEW sort of bleed over, my main event be Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon sitting down to talk about their anniversary, 25 years of the ladder match, and do like an alternate commentary on it and do a Q&A, and then let fans do photos with the Intercontinental title and a ladder and both of those guys. I thought that would be unique and something that hadn't been done, and it would be cool. And so when I asked for him again, and I said, hey, he agreed originally, we already made the finances work. I just need you guys to give him your blessing. I was told to hold on. I held on. Nothing happened. I kept following up every day. And about, I don't know, 10 days later, I said, hey, I'm just going to let everybody know that nothing's happening. And I did.
And I'm going to kind of let a little bit out about what happened with us because I've not talked about it yet. But from our point of view, I remember finding out on March the 1st that the Q&A was off. We were definitely not getting the Q&A. And in my head, I thought, well, wait a minute. Because if you go to StarCast, right, like you are going to get to do the meet and greet, but there's so much other stuff happening. So like if people pay hundreds of dollars, there's a lot of value to StarCast. Whereas in my head, I was going, if I bring over The Undertaker and people just get to meet him and that's it, and that's like a 30-second experience, I feel bad taking money for just that. So I was like, okay, we'll try and get someone else to do the Q&A. My immediate thought was Mick Foley would be great. Big feud with The Undertaker, da da da. Set up a phone call with Mick, and within 5 minutes, he agreed to do it. And I was like, great. I think that's the best scenario we can come up with. Then a week later, I get a legal notice from a certain corporation in Connecticut telling me that we were not authorized to have this show and we have 3 days to not advertise it and pay everyone back their money. And that's when Undertaker stepped in. And I think people should know this about Undertaker, is that he fought to try and keep these commitments. And for me, it was a case of if he didn't keep these commitments, I don't know if we'd be able to keep doing shows, because the one thing that is difficult when we book talent is that if we're paying talent in dollars and they return the dollars, the pound rate is a lot different coming back. So it's a very big discrepancy. So luckily it was able to kind of pan out. But for you, I mean, the other thing I was going to ask you is you guys announced Kurt Angle early April, I think it was. And then they pulled him as well. What was the reason for pulling Kurt? Because I would assume Kurt is not so, because like with Undertaker, okay, their thing is they don't want it to be with AEW, and Taker's like, you know, their Babe Ruth guy. But with Kurt, it felt like that would be a much easier booking for you to have Kurt, since he's not wrestling anymore. He's not really on TV.
I don't know why they pulled him. You know, I was told, Kurt made contact and said, hey, they won't let me do Starcade. Sorry. And, you know, when we did a little digging, we realized it was because, you know, oh, well, you know, that's AEW. StarCast is AEW. And that's not the case. It's worth mentioning. It was just reported last week, or it just came out last week. But at the time, the exact same day, he had to cancel WrestleCade. And he was given the same reason. Hey, you guys are AEW. And it's because last year SCU was there, I believe, is the only crossover. Like, that's dumb. SCU wasn't even a thing for AEW last year, because AEW wasn't a thing last year. But either way, you know, he's still advertised and promoted for an appearance in August in Charlotte. Team Art has taken over where Greg Price was. The NWA Legends Fan Fest is going to happen, I think, in late July or early August. So it's still happening. It's really amazing that all of this has shook out the way it is, where this one's okay and that's not. But I've given up on trying to figure out, you know, why. Let's just deal with the realities of what is and try to make the best of it.
To kind of move on from the Undertaker thing, which, you know, from my point of view, thank fuck it's over. Thank fuck it was, you know, the most stressful experience I've ever had. But for you with StarCast, I was at the convention for the Love of Wrestling in Liverpool like 10 days ago. And one of the things I thought was interesting about it was as I was walking around the table, the tables and everything, it was all people from the past, right? Like, there was nobody... Well, Jericho was there, but, like, there was it was very much emphasized on, like, early 90s WWF and Attitude Era. And one of the things with StarCast that I feel is really cool is that there's a mix of both. It's not just stuff from the past. It's a mix of stuff from right now and stuff from the past. Was that a conscious effort for you when you were putting together the first one and the second one, that there's kind of a little bit for everybody?
Absolutely. I mean, let's make no mistake. The reason this thing is even happening is Cody and the Young Bucks. Cody and the Young Bucks believed in me and gave me an opportunity to promote a convention, something I'd never done before. And Cody and the Young Bucks are not nostalgia. They're what's happening now, today. So I definitely wanted to have a presence for both, because my podcast and everything I do in the quote unquote wrestling space is based on nostalgia. But Cody and the Young Bucks drew the house and allowed this to happen. So we want to highlight what's cool today and what was cool when we were kids.
And I guess one of the things I was going to ask you about the future, because when you do StarCast 2, say, for example, there is a StarCast 3, wherever it would be, Chicago or wherever else, one would assume, just from kind of reading it, that maybe WWE are not going to be wanting to let any talent do it. Do you think that would hinder it in any way, or do you think that's just kind of like, okay, I'm just going to get more creative with my ideas of who we bring in and how we do it? Do you think there's still a market for multiple StarCasts if they don't want to be involved in any way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you really look at who's on the lineup right now, and realistically, you know, there's not anybody under WWE contract. I mean, here and there, Bruce Pritchard, you know, Shane Helms. Okay, I won't be able to have those guys. I got it. But realistically, outside of that, what is there? I mean, guys on Legends deals, and that's all they do is make appearances like this. So I don't think it will be that different, but I will reveal this. If I'm dumb enough to do a StarCast 3, you know, we're going to have to do something different, because realistically, and this is just me being as honest as I can't beat StarCast 2. I mean, this is the best convention layout anybody's ever had. I mean, I've got so many little, I mean, how do you beat the roast of Ric Flair? Like, where do I started, my first roast was Bruce Pritchard. Now it's Ric Flair. Well, there's only one place to go now, and it's down. So I think I've killed roasts. Can't do those anymore. We found, you know, the lost tape that everybody's looked for forever and ever. And we got the guy who was in the match, Tom McGee. Well, the luster will be off for Stark. I mean, you've already done it, so you can't do it again. Taz never makes appearances, so it's really cool that he's making one here. But I mean, what do we do for the next one? Kenta Kobashi. I mean, listen, it was tough to get him to come to Las Vegas. Am I going to be able to sell him on coming to Chicago? I don't know. So there's so many of these things that realistically are going to be exclusive. Can't do them again. Never going to happen again. Doesn't make sense to do it again. StarCast 2 is it, man. I'm not saying it's the last one I'll ever do, but I will say, if I'm dumb enough to do 3, it's going to have to be different.
And the other question I want to ask, just because I think people will be wondering it. So say StarCast 2 happens, big success, as I'm sure it will be. And, you know, because there's a lot of people saying there's not a war, there's not going to be a war, blah, 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 blah. But we know that WWE are probably going to see it as a war. They already see it as a war, given what they've done to you. You know, like, not to you, but, like, by pulling Taker and pulling Kurt Angle, there's definitely a vibe that, you know, there's an issue. So if after StarCast 2, I mean, if WWE were to come to you and say, we want you to do StarCast with us in the future, is that on the table for you? Or is it one of those things of, like, you know, you started this with Cody in the Bucks, and that's what StarCast is?
I don't have any agreement with Cody in the Bucks, but in my mind, StarCast will always be Cody and Conrad, because he's the first guy I pitched. He's the guy who gave me the opportunity. So there won't be a WWE StarCast. That doesn't mean I won't do anything with WWE. It's worth mentioning, my network show last year with Bruce, I had StarCast in the background of every single episode. I was drinking out of a StarCast mug. I had StarCast signs behind me on camera. I have been promoting StarCast for more than a year now, one way or another, between the first convention and this one. And it was never a problem with WWE. It's only a problem now that AEW is involved, but it was always based on doing stuff with Cody. So that's not going to change no matter what.
And, you know, obviously you've said 100 times, like, StarCast is not AEW. It's running the same weekend. That's kind of as far as it goes. But I mean, in terms of just you as a fan, people can hear it on all your podcasts of how knowledgeable you are about wrestling. What do you think about the whole AEW starting up? I mean, it's very clear that WWE right now is in a decline. the shows are not as exciting as they maybe were a few months ago. Like, how do you think it's good that AEW is coming about and that it's going to be something different for people?
I would argue that WWE is very, very healthy. I understand that ratings are down and that less people are watching, but I do think that, you know, wrestling's always been cyclical and the creative is always going to be cyclical. You can't stay on top of everything 24/7. I mean, even your favorite TV show has some episodes where you're like, well, that was just okay. I mean, you've got your favorite episode that you all, oh man, I love this show or this particular story or whatever, but there's always some that aren't as hot. I don't think WWE is worried about AEW taking market share. I think they're worried about them taking some talent, but not necessarily market share just yet. But I'm incredibly hopeful for what AEW is going to put together. As a wrestling fan, it's very exciting to me because we've often wondered, you know, hey man, what if somebody came back and really tried to compete? And I don't think that AEW is really trying to compete. I think they're just trying to do their own thing. And that's my big thing I see online is people making comparisons to AEW to WCW. I wish they wouldn't do that. Like, don't hope that AEW is WCW. Hope that AEW is its own thing. Hope that they're successful in their own way. But they don't have to be head to head. They don't have to make more money. They don't have to sell more pay-per-views. They don't have to sell more tickets. You can be very profitable and very successful and very happy. And oh, by the way, very good and very entertaining and someone's favorite without quote unquote beating WWE. So I'm not looking at it like it's a war and somebody has to lose in order for somebody else to win. I think both sides can win.
I was at WrestleMania this year. I went to all the WWE shows. Like, I watch WWE all the time. But, like, so for me, for example, as a fan, I'm not really someone who can sit through a 6-hour New Japan show. It's just not for me. But I feel like with All In last September, there was this, like, it was like a variety show, and you got a little bit of everything. It almost feels like they are going to appeal to a mass audience.
Yeah, I do think that All In was the best show last year. I don't think that can be debated. You know, And what made it, and this is something I don't think people talk about enough, is the crowd. The crowd was connected with what was happening in the ring. And that's so difficult to do anywhere else, especially WWE, because it's week in, week out. There's so much content that for you to be really that connected, it's really, really hard. And the closest they come is the Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania. But All In, man. Everybody in that crowd knew everybody in that ring. They knew their story. They knew why they were there. They knew what it meant to them. They understood the stakes, as Eric Bischoff says. It was fucking awesome. And I know that that's going to happen again in Las Vegas. The challenge to me will be AEW doing that every single week when they have weekly TV, because that's going to be much more difficult to do. Like right now, I'm counting the days down to Double or Nothing. Yes, I'm excited about StarCast. But man, as a wrestling fan, this is the new beginning. This is so exciting. I'm all about it. But once the show starts, is it going to be like that every week? I think it's going to be different. And that's what we need. We need different.
And what, you know, people have been speculating a lot with you about if there's going to be an on-screen role for you at AEW. We saw you at the rally and stuff like that. Is it something that you're open to, or is it something that you'd rather kind of keep away from being on screen with AEW specifically? Like, where does your kind of brain work right now in terms of that?
No, you know, listen, I appreciate people asking that, but I've never been on TV. You know, I did the little network thing. I'm not TV friendly. I'm a big fat bearded Southern dude. I've never done commentary. I've never been involved in the business like that. I'm probably better suited for podcasts, but I'm going to support them no matter what.
In terms of podcasting, so, I mean, obviously you do 365 podcasts a week, and like something I was kind of curious about was when you're doing the shows with Bruce or you're doing the shows with Eric, like you're obviously talking to them about their experiences and what's going on with specific incidents or episodes or shows, but then you're also very knowledgeable with Dave Meltzer's work. How difficult is it for you, as an example, we said the Montreal Screwjob, and you're talking to Bruce about that, and he's kind of debunking 75% of what Dave Meltzer says, but then Dave Meltzer's saying, well, if I'd got it wrong, I would have been corrected. How do you judge how far you take it, and what is the kind of goal for you with the audience of managing those two things? Because it is a hard thing to manage.
It is a hard thing, but you know, I know about how long we're going to go because I know how many pages of notes we've got, and I know what type of story we're trying to tell. And I don't want to get stuck in the mud arguing about something that isn't all that relative to the story and might derail us in a major way. And sometimes if it's a very critical point for wrestling or debunking a narrative that people online like myself have been led to believe for a long time, I'll dig my heels in. But if it's really not that important in the scheme of things, I'll just dismiss it and we'll keep it moving. But I also know there's some things that these guys are just never going to back up on, and they're going to want to argue forever, and we're just going to disagree. So when we get to the point where I know we're just going to disagree and there's nothing they're going to say that's going to change my or the listener's mind, then I'm just going to keep it moving.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we've got a lot of listener questions that we're going to do. But first of all, we should mention that Inside the Ropes is going to be part of StarCast 2, which is hugely exciting news. I want to thank all the listeners who've tweeted Conrad and abused him online to try and get us a gig. So
what's great is the gig was lined up forever ago, but we, because we didn't want to get any of this Undertaker mess on us.
Well, no, let me put you over. I want to be honest here. So originally what had happened, if the full story, is that Cody and I had talked last year about us doing something at StarCast 1. And there was discussions, but then Conrad had put everything together already, and we just couldn't make it work. There was just no way to make something work at that point in time, so we left it. And then Cody and I had a chat in December when he was over, and then that Conrad and I chatted again, and we put something together. And I had to call Conrad and just say, look, you know, you don't have to, like, it's up to you, but if you could please not announce that I'm going to be on that, not that I'm going to shift tickets really or anything, but like, if I was announced for StarCast, that could impact the Taker thing. And you were very kind to just say, look, we will wait and we'll announce when that's over. So I want to thank you for doing that.
Yeah, no problem, man. Listen, I'm excited to have you guys involved. I'm a fan of your stuff. And it's funny because you and I get a lot of comparisons where people say that I'm the American Kenny and you're the UK Conrad or whatever, with similar style and what we do with the guys. And it's really cool that we get to work together on this. And I was already feeling your pain on the Undertaker business, so no problem at all. But it was fun getting abused at least once a day, every day for 3 months, where I'm like, he's fucking coming.
Because I was just like, there's nothing I can do. I can't be like, stop asking him or anything. But it's funny because like, I do feel it sometimes, and I'm not saying this to suck up to you because you're already bringing me over, so now I've got the gig. But like, you know, you do a different thing than I do. You know, I do interviews on stage, which you know, they are challenging, but you do a weekly podcast with different people. And I feel like it is a different thing. I think we come from the same place of being very knowledgeable. Like, I feel like you and I are the guys who, if we're sitting at a bar or something and someone, like, talks about a match that happened at a SummerSlam that was at a Survivor Series, we get, like, a twitch because you really want to correct them to, like, what it was. But, like, I feel like we have that Rain Man knowledge in some ways. But, I'm really excited to do it. Dustin Rhodes is a great guest. And the thing that's great about it is that he's now doing this match with Cody at Double or Nothing, which, you know, thank God, is finally happening. And those promos they've done have been amazing. And we're going to get to talk to him the day after that match. So there's so much stuff to go into with the Goldust character and what he's doing now and where that's going to lead. So I think it's going to be a pretty exciting show and a good addition to StarCast.
I'm excited, man. You know, it's his first time, you know, doing something like this where everybody can see it. I know you guys had an incredible tour, but now that this is going to be on Fight as a part of a much bigger package, and I guess we should mention because we haven't yet, there's like 24 shows that are being broadcast through Fight at StarCastOnFight.com, and it's just $59. You get to watch it live and on demand, endless replays. I don't know why you wouldn't do it. If you're a wrestling fan, it breaks down to a couple of bucks a show, and it's really, really good stuff, like Inside the Ropes with Dustin Rhodes, and of course, the roast of Ric Flair, everything in between. I don't know why you wouldn't check it out. Go look for yourself and see if you think it's a great value. I know I do. It's StarCastOnFight.com.
I mean, yeah, it's like, because if you were to buy one show, it's like $40. And you could pay $60 and get like 29 shows or whatever it is.
Because yeah, I
feel like it's one of those things where, like, because Double or Nothing, I was going to say All In, Double or Nothing is one of those weekends where, like, it feels like everybody's going to be watching. So if you pay that $60, you're going to get to see everything that happens around that, the weigh-in, the Roast of Ric Flair, our show. I'm going to be around all weekend just basically saying, Conrad, do you need some help with anything? So you never know what else can happen. But yeah, it's going to be very exciting. And I feel like when we did the tour here in the UK, it was like we were doing the pre-workout for the match, and the match is in Vegas. So I also want to say to you, something that's interesting is that I didn't realize this until we announced it, but One of my favorite WrestleManias as a kid that I get crucified for on a regular basis. I love WrestleMania 9. Like, I love it. So WrestleMania 9 was in Caesar's Palace, and our show is going to be in a theater in Caesar's Palace, which is just insane. Absolutely insane.
Here's what's even more fun. You know, I'm not a Las Vegas resident, but when I've asked around, they've told me that, you know, in time, of course, Caesar's Palace has been added onto. I mean, it's been around forever, decades and decades. But it's been, you know, they've expanded. They've bought more property and continue to expand. Well, allegedly, the convention center, the conference center, rather, where we're going to be doing StarCast, which is specifically in the Octavius Ballroom and the Milano Ballroom, it's like 75,000 square feet between them. That area where they built that is where the original WrestleMania 9 was.
Oh, now, fuck off. No way. That's amazing.
The structure didn't exist, but when they added the conference center, that's the area where they had the ring, the fans, all of that. We're in the exact same spot. And if we could just get you to come into the building riding an elephant or a camel, I think, you know, we're there.
Listen, for an extra $50, I'll do almost anything. Just sign me up. No, but it's you know, I always defend, you know, WrestleMania 9 is like that shit movie that you just love. And like Fincus Maximus, Giant Gonzalez, it's the best. Anyway, we should get some listener questions if you don't mind, Conrad, because we've got tons of them that came in for you. One of the most popular listener questions that we've had so far.
Wow. Well,
more popular than Sting.
Oh, don't tell me that, because I'm going to be strutting the ass around the house here. Hey, popular than Sting. Oh, I do want to mention, we've buried the lead here. I'm doing a new podcast with Jim Ross. It's called Grilling JR. You can find it on the Jim Ross Report. So anywhere you enjoyed Jim's old podcast, the Jim Ross Report, go hit subscribe again, leave us a 5-star review and check it out. I'm proud to announce, and we haven't even said this online, but the first episode we did that dropped Thursday morning, and we're taping this now on Sunday, you and I, is the most listened to podcast in the history of Westwood One for Jim Ross. So as long as his show has been with Westwood One, through all the great guests he's had, whether it's Kenny Omega or Chris Jericho or whatever, where we go back and we talk about him jumping from WCW to the WWF at WrestleMania 9, it is the most downloaded Jim Ross podcast in the history of Westwood One.
Well, yeah, I think what's cool about that is that, and that, you know, this is just what I've heard from a lot of fans over the years, is that they love Jim, but I don't think the format before was the best fit for him. And I think this one is. And that's nothing to take away from Jim, but I think that, you know, that he's got so much knowledge about the stuff that he's been involved in, that I feel like one of your shows where you go through a topic or a show or an experience is the best fit for him. I listened to Grill and JR yesterday. It's great. And I think he's going to do well with that format. I think it's going to be really good. So,
well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I'm actually working on just to break this news here, I'm working on a weekly podcast with Virgil. We're expecting 102 listeners per week. So, you know, I'll let that drop soon. anyway, so
I know I keep distracting, but can I give you a good Virgil story?
Please, please do.
I had the best, I think it's one of the best ideas ever for this convention, but I wasn't able to put it together. So I'll just share with you here.
Okay.
And I'm probably going to shoot myself in the foot because I can't do it again if I share here, but whatever, here we go. I wanted to book Virgil, and I wanted to do, and I tried this last year too, but a different angle, a different take on it. Last year, I wanted him to set up a table outside of the hotel at StarCast and us put signs up around all the entrances saying that he was banned from entering and don't let him enter. And he keeps setting up outside. I just thought that was hilarious. So this year I decided, okay, let's do something different. And my pitch was, hey man, I want you to do a dollar meet and greet. It's a dollar. Why would you not buy it? It's a dollar. And I thought by doing so, we could create an incredible line. We'd sell it out. I would set up, you know, hey, we'll do 200 of these. And online, people would buy a Virgil meet and greet because it was a dollar. And we would call it the Not So Lonely Virgil meet and greet. And then we would have his team get footage of everybody standing in line. And instead of Virgil sitting behind the lonely table where it says wrestling superstar and no one in sight, instead, what we would have is a line sold out with people waiting for their Virgil meet and greet for a dollar. Now, I would have taken a loss on that, but I think it would have been a lot of fun.
How did he not go for that?
He wanted too much money.
Of course, but do you know what's funny? So there's the lonelyvirgil.net site, and I was at WrestleMania 29, and I was at the... I don't want to shit on this, but I'm about to anyway. There's a party called Shenanigans that happens every year at WrestleMania, and I made the mistake of going, because it's like the worst idea. You pay $40 to get in, and then you basically need to... You're around all the wrestlers, but if you want to meet them, you have to pay. It's a weird setup. But I'm there, and Virgil's there. And unbeknownst to me, for about a year and a half, I'm in this photo where it's lonely Virgil. Like, I'm like 5 steps away from him, drinking a beer, just away from him. And I've seen him in action 3 or 4 times. He'll be like, hey, what's your name, Conrad? And he'll sign it for Conrad, and they'll be like, you need to buy it. I've signed your name on it. I can't use it again. And he'll try every trick in the book. But there's something weirdly lovable about him, even though he's insane. So...
Yeah. I agree, and I hope that I get to do something with him in the future. I'm sure I'll come up with something else funny, but the not-so-lonely Virgil meet and greet, I thought, was a tremendous idea.
I mean, yeah. Virgil, what were you thinking? Okay, so let's get into the questions. Got a ton of them here. Reese Saunders wants to know, how was the transition in your life from like the day job to also being a voice of wrestling podcasts?
Hell, you know, I've signed up for more than I can... agree to or really, it's just a lot, and there's a lot of things I have to let slide, especially at the house. Like my wife is not happy with me that I've started a fourth podcast with JR, or that I'm doing another Starcast. But hey, I'm still married, Kenny, so I got that going.
Well, my main aim of coming over to Vegas is not even doing the show with Dustin. It's that I want to like slowly infiltrate your like setup, so that, like, you can be the Meltzer and I can be the Alvarez. So like that's the goal. That's the long-term goal.
Well, let me just tell you, I'm in. Sign me up, because I need the fucking help.
Because the thing is, you can't be a Scottish guy in the States and do all the podcasts that you do. You need the American accent. You've got it. You're fit.
Yeah, I don't think most Americans would call my accent an American accent, but I appreciate the compliment.
Do you know how many times... Like, I remember interviewing Errol Hebner once, and he could not understand a fucking word that I said. I was like, sure. What did you make about the Hogan and Andre match at the main event? And he was like, what? Who? Couldn't get it. I asked Russo once to do a jingle that said, hey, this is Vince Russo, you're listening to Inside the Ropes. And he called it Insane Divorce. Because the accent's a problem. Anyway.
What's funny is when we were over there doing shows with Fight Forever in December, Bruce would look to me and say, what did he say? Like, under his voice. And then I would say, he wanted to know about Mr. Perfect. Oh, okay. Got it. But it was just funny because I've become the, I don't have any trouble understanding you. I guess I'm the Scottish whisperer. I don't know.
There you go. We should just bring you over. Peter Jenkins wants to know, what do you put your massive success, my God, this is so sucking up your dick here, but what does Conrad put his massive success and seeming Midas touch when it comes to wrestling down to? What's your secret?
I try not to overthink it. I'm a fan. And so really the end all be all is, hey, would I buy this? Hey, would I watch this? Hey, would I listen to this? And if it's not something to my taste, then I don't really want to do it. And, you know, every now and again, we'll cover a topic where I'm really not that into it. And if I'm not that into it, the listeners usually aren't either. I feel like I am the prototype of a listener. I am the demographic for a listener to one of my pods. And if I'm not entertained by it, pretty good chance other people aren't. I mean, I really do believe that. I mean, that's been my entire strategy. If I think it's good, it's usually going to work. If I don't really like it, people aren't going to like it.
Lee O'Brien, I mean, I don't know why I'm asking this question. It's basically a Blue Chew related question. And he asks, have you low key got a big hog?
Well, I'm married and, she's way better looking than me. In America, we say outkicked my coverage. So I'll let you figure it out.
There you go. James Hughes, how was working with WWE last year? What was the experience like?
Oh, it was easy. I can't say enough nice things about the guys in production. You know, we had some back and forth, you know, getting the contract like we liked it. But once we had that, it really was the easiest, most pleasant experience ever. You know, they really stayed out of our way and let us be us. And we've always heard about micromanaging. That did not exist for us. The only thing that ever was different is after the fact, you know, they had to clip something here or there because there was pending litigation about it. And obviously we understand that. And had I known that there was pending litigation about something I just casually mentioned, I wouldn't have mentioned it. Not because I'm a shill for WWE, but because I know it, they can't air it. Like, they can't actively talk about something they're involved in. So that's really it. But I can't say enough nice things about the people that we worked with WWE last year. Total professional, very, very helpful. Do whatever you need them to do. Really good.
I do feel that you deserve some sort of medal for being able to advertise StarCast every week on WWE TV. It was genius.
Well, Absolutely. It was one of those ask forgiveness, not permission deals. But hey, it's still there. Go check it out. Something else to wrestle on the WWE Network.
What else have we got here? Some questions we've already covered. Richard Land wants to say thank you for getting him about 2,000 more followers on Twitter yesterday when you retweeted his Kamala Mean Gene blooper video with Tweet of the Year. That was great.
Dude, that Kamala Mean Gene video yesterday about what he was doing in the hotel room that made him miss the promos is the funniest thing I've seen on Twitter this year. Outstanding.
I remember we interviewed Mean Gene in 2012 for the podcast, and he talked about, like, at SummerSlam 92, trying to have a cocktail with the Queen. He's insane. He was so good. Courtney Johnson wants to know, if you could start a podcast with anyone other than Vince McMahon, who would it be?
Man, that's a great question. You know, I think I've got most of them right now. I mean, I think there's a couple of guys out there who have an incredible reputation as a storyteller who aren't doing anything. But I don't think Paul Heyman is available, and I don't know that Arn Anderson would want to, but I think, and maybe, you know, I know he's not available now, but Jeff Jarrett, I think, is maybe one of the more interesting characters in the history of wrestling. Nobody has a story like his.
I think there was a rumor about that one, right? There was people kind of saying, you know, him doing one with his TNA run and WWE and all that, he would have a lot to say, and you could ride that out for a long time.
It wasn't a rumor. We were talking about it. We wanted to do it, but he's back with WWE now, and he's on the road, you know, 38 days a week. Realistically, he doesn't have time for that.
Also, I should ask you this, because there was a rumor about this as well. Is there any truth to the idea that you trademarked Dead Man Talking to do an Undertaker podcast?
No, I trademarked Dead Man Talking because we were going to do a stage show. We mentioned this whole strategy earlier, but we were going to do a stage show at StarCast. And if we were going to do that, I wanted to call it Dead Man Talking. I mean, that's really it.
Do you know the shame of it all is that when we did the tour with him this week, I you know, got to spend 15 minutes with him because that was all I was allowed to. But when we did spend time together, he's the nicest guy, and he also, like, has a lot to say. And I feel like he would be a really good talker. So hopefully one day, whether it's me or you or somebody, like, people deserve to hear what he's got to say, because he's a really funny, charming guy who is so far from the Undertaker that you can even imagine. So
yeah, I mean, first of all, he's not dead, so he's got that going for him. But no, he is, to your point, he's very cool. I mean, he is one of the cooler guys I've met in wrestling. I was with Rick years ago at a bar in Nashville, or a hotel bar in Nashville, where he was going to be on Raw or SmackDown or whatever the next day. And we just wound up hanging out and having dinner at the bar and having some drinks. And he's delightful. I mean, he's getting a bad rap on all of this. You know, it's probably a fumble on his management side, not his.
I don't think I've said this publicly, but it's worth saying. He actually flew to meet Vince to try and come to the UK shows. Like, that's, he did that. So I feel like he should get the credit for it, because he did try his best with us to do it. And he actually, backstage on the last day, when we were like getting something, and he just said, "Kenny, I'm not as much of a prima donna as they make me out to be." And I just kind of went, "Okay, cool. No worries."
I believe that, because he's friends with Bruce Pritchard, and, you know, if you're a big prima donna, it's probably hard to get along with Bruce Pritchard because he's a big prima donna, you know?
That's true. I did love when I met you in person for the first time in December, saw Bruce there, he's in the XFL jersey. I was just like, he knows how to rep it. He's just putting in people's minds. It's good PR. Oh God, I'm going to butcher this name. Is it Daniel? It's an Irish name, D-A-I-N-E-A-L, Daniel Davis. What is your favorite Something to Wrestle With episode?
Man, that's hard to say. You know, we've had so much fun. You know, right off, I get different answers every time, but WWE-CW was pretty good. We talked about the Punjabi Boss Man there, and tons of funny, silly stuff. JR having to have a discussion with somebody about whether or not they had done nude modeling before. That stuff sticks out to me. It's still funny. I still think the George the Rat story on the Jim Cornette episode is one of the funniest things we've ever done. And I love the Sunny episode just because there's so much jaw dropping. There's no way somebody really wrote that. It's hard to pick, but off the top of my head, those are my three favorites right now.
Well, because obviously with your episodes tend to be 2.5-3 hours long. And for most podcasts, you kind of go, you want to keep it to like 90 minutes, whatever. Like, were you just kind of from the beginning, like, if we're going to tackle these topics in depth, we have to kind of go long?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's necessary that you go long, but I do think it's necessary that you tell the whole story. You know, I don't want to divide it up into two parts, and I know that that's what a lot of podcasters do, but I found that it hurts your downloads for part two, and I'm in the business of downloads. So I want to keep it all in part one, and if it's a little longer, dude, I'm giving you 7 days to listen to it. Break it up. If it's 3 hours, you know, that's 20 minutes a day, man. Get it.
Mark McEwen wants to know, he said, I know very little about your background, so pretty much how did you get started in wrestling podcasts and how did it end up evolving with Bruce and Eric?
I was becoming fast friends with Ric Flair in a hard time in his life after he had lost his son Reed, and we were hanging out too much and probably drinking too much and having a good time. He got an offer to do a podcast with CBS. He didn't really understand what a podcast was or how to do one. He asked me to come in for the first episode and just ask him fan questions. At the end of that show, I dug it. CBS dug it. And before you know it, I was an accidental podcaster. I kept coming back every week. And eventually I started a show with Bruce and then one with Tony and now Eric and now JR. And I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to keep it going.
Well, the one that's the most interesting to me is Bruce, because I don't think everybody would automatically pick that Bruce was a great podcast subject, but he ended up becoming this huge. I mean, I remember being at the show in Glasgow in December. I mean, like, if somebody had told me 2 years, 3 years before, Bruce Pritchard is going to have hundreds of people, you know, in a club in Glasgow with people losing their shit for, like, you know, faces and all these gimmicks and stuff like that, you would just never have believed it. So what did you see in the Bruce thing that people maybe didn't see before it happened?
Bruce is a tremendous storyteller. I mean, tremendous. And his ability to do different impressions and funny caricatures and weave a story and his intimacy and passion for the stuff he did. You know, I mean, a lot of times we sit at home and we see something happen on TV and we're like, man, why did they do this? He probably knows because he was involved in that decision-making process. And for a lot of the early stuff, you know, there wasn't a 60-man writing team. It's Vince McMahon, it's Pat Patterson, and it's Bruce Pritchard. Now, of course, that would change. But, you know, in 87, 88, 89, 90, a lot of that stuff is just them sitting around. Hey, here's what we're going to do. And obviously, you know, with the Attitude Era, it started to grow a little bit. But even then, you know, 94, 95, 96, 97, Bruce is in on all of those meetings and discussions. And it's a very, very tight-knit group. And then it starts to get a little bigger and it starts to evolve. But even from that point, he's producing it. So when you've got somebody who can't just talk intelligently about what happened, but can give you the why, and I think that's the reason Something to Wrestle has been so successful. His ability to tell a story, his ability to be entertaining with characters and voices, but the thirst of fans who want to know why. Not what happened, not how it happened. We can figure that out, but why it happened.
Yeah, and at first I was kind of like, Bruce Pritchard, really? But then you listen to him and, you know, he is entertaining. You can't argue with how entertaining he is. Adam Richards wants to know, do you have an assistant researcher for your shows? Because between your day job and now with 4 in-depth podcasts, Adam's very curious how you manage your time.
No, you're exactly right. I do have to have help. Chris Warzynski and my lifelong best wrestling friend, Clint Beckley, helped me organize my notes. What we do is the whole process is we have a topic. We know what that topic is going to be. We watch the show and then we start to go to 3 or 4 different outlets to gather information and do what I would call a data dump. So we'll go to the history of WWE.com. That's got all the house show results. We'll go to the Torches website. We'll go to the Wrestling Observer website. We'll scour their backlogged newsletter archives and, you know, sort of find everything we need to do. And that's kind of easy to do. You just hit Control F on your keyboard and you're looking for keywords. And then we're going to see if those subjects have done a shoot interview or if they've done a documentary or if they've written a book. And once you have all of that, now you've got all the information about that and you compile it all into this Google Doc, just copy paste style. And it may be, you know, 200 pages when you're done. And then you try to trim the fat and you try to say what's important to this story, what's relative to this story, chronologically, how do we tell this story in order, and try to paint both sides of the picture. So if the book says something different from the observer, we need to cover both sides. But most importantly, we need to remember that we, and by we, I mean me, I'm Scottie Pippen. Whoever the host is Michael Jordan. That's a basketball reference. I don't know if that translates over there, but Scottie Pippen was the B star. He wasn't the A star. He was the guy making the other guy be the superstar. And that's the deal. I'm supposed to be driving the ship, but I'm getting Bruce where he needs to be entertaining. That's my role on the show. So I definitely have some help. They'll do that data dump for me and send me a rough sketch and outline, and then I'll go through and trim some more and add some more and maybe rearrange some things. And once we have that outline, we're ready to get going.
We just got a couple of questions left, but I wanted to ask you, I mean, how's the reaction been from fans to you? Because it must be strange when, like you say, you come in as the fan and the kind of you're the guy that throws the balls to the star to try and knock out the park. What's the reaction been like over the last couple of years from fans? And how do you feel now about being a podcast celebrity?
Well, it's a little silly. You know, it's crazy to think that anybody wants to meet me or wants a picture with me or whatever. But I'm happy to do it. But you know, I don't like charge for meet and greets at Starcast or anything. Like, if you want to come say hello, by all means, please do. And, you know, thanks for listening to our stuff and blah, blah. But I mean, that's really it. It's surreal that anybody wants to meet me or has any interest in, you know, the process or what we're doing. I appreciate the support and our fans for listening, but I don't really understand why I'm special. I mean, I'm not, I'm just a fan who had an idea, and I'm working really hard to carry that idea out there. And if you're willing to put in the time, you can do it too. So if you're sitting at home right now, listening to this and think, man, I wish I had a podcast, just do it, man. I mean, that's really it. The only way to do this is to just do it. And I'm sure Kenny would say the same thing. Nobody's going to come along and say, we want you to be a successful podcaster. You just got to get in there and start doing it and figure it out. And most importantly, have fun. But if your plan is to emulate this person or that person, it won't work. You've got to do what you want to do.
Yeah, 100%. But people, because the thing I found really weird when I was doing What Culture videos and stuff, is people would start to ask my autograph, and I was going, what? Like, why would this is, you do understand this is going to devalue whatever you have here. Like, yes. my name, you know, it will be, but the thing that I always say when people, because I've had, I don't know if you've had this, but I've had people that I know in my life or that I kind of know in a roundabout way, and they start a podcast and they start it with the idea of, I tomorrow want this to be huge. And I think that you have to do it because you're passionate about it. And yep. I think that you have to do either one of two things. If you can do both, I think you've hit the jackpot. There's so much content now. There's so many podcasts. Conrad's got four. We've got like three or four. If you can be funny or informative, you've got a chance. If you can be both, you've got a winner, I think. So.
No, I totally agree. You know, this is worth mentioning. You know, the podcasts do make money now, and they're probably the highest grossing podcasts around, because I try to monetize everything, and I try to find a way to create content that people will support and get a bunch of downloads, and then, you know, you start to make money. But that was not the case at first. You know, we started this show, Bruce and I did, in mid-August. And we were into, I'm going to say April, before I made a dollar. So, you know, we're 8 months in before I make any money. And are we doing well now? Yes, absolutely. But you've got to have the vision for what you're doing, and you've got to really love it. But the idea that, I'm going to be a full-time podcaster, I quit my job. Don't do that. That's not a good idea. But if you really enjoy what you're doing and you're having a good time, then the money will come eventually. You've just got to hang in there.
I do also want to apologize in advance, because truth be told, Inside the Ropes, we do not make money through podcasts. We don't do ads or anything. So I'm going to pick Conrad's brain in Vegas. So if we start shilling dick pills, it is his fault. I want to just say it in advance.
I'm telling you, there's money in dick pills.
Oh, I bet there is. I'm just curious to know how. So the last couple of questions we've got is, we have Jason Torrance wants to know, since Bruce went back to WWE, has anyone from the company tried to influence your content?
No, absolutely not. I know a lot of people are going to argue that and say, that's bullshit. But no, we've never had a conversation with anybody about changing the content of the show. We did have one call from somebody who works in the front office after we told a pretty graphic story that Sonny wrote in her book about a performer who's near and dear to the WWE corporate structure. And they said, hey, you need to appreciate the megaphone that you've got here. And I didn't really understand what he meant. And he said, you know, well, you told that story. And I said, well, no, we just read it from her book. And he put it in perspective for me in a way where I really hadn't really understood the size of the show yet. He said, how many people do you think bought that book? I said, I don't know. He's like, no, give me a number. How many people do you think bought that book? 1500. He's like, how many people listen to your show? Okay. Got it. I mean, that show had 400,000 downloads in the first 10 days. So yeah, 400,000 wrestling fans now know this detail that beforehand, maybe 1500 did. And maybe those 1500 told a friend, so maybe 3000 did. But now more than 100 times that know this story. And that's on us. And this is a married guy who has changed his life and blah, blah, blah. And okay, you're right. I didn't think about that. And I'll take that into consideration. That being said, you know, I haven't not told a story. I've just maybe not been as graphic about some of the silliness. And in fairness, nothing like that's ever come up again. It's so unbelievable that she would write that at all. But nothing like that's come up again. But that's literally the only time anyone from WWE, and he didn't call corporately. He called from his cell phone to say, hey man, I don't know if you know, but, and to me, that was just a buddy looking out for me. And I'm glad to have gotten that call.
Our very own David, who podcasts with us, wants to know, I want to know how difficult it is to run your actual business with the success of the wrestling gig on the side. Also, where did you find that magical clock with 48 hours in a day? And can I have one?
Well, you know, here's the deal. I sleep from 1 to 6, and from the minute I wake up until I go to bed, I'm working. And, I don't regret that. And I don't think that's a bad thing. My wife disagrees. I don't feel like I'm sacrificing anything. I'm doing what I want to do and I'm having a good time. And it's that old cliche, you know, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. I'm not really working. I mean, this is pretty fun. So that's the strategy, but no, the business has done really well. We just had our best month we've ever had in the month of April. And I think we're on track to beat it again in May. So knock on wood, things are really, really well right now.
But you're not like Vince McMahon that you'll never take a holiday or a vacation, right? Would you take a long weekend now and then?
Oh no! Here's the deal: as soon as StarCast is over, I'm getting on a plane Monday morning and going to Mexico, and I'm not coming back for a week.
Good, I'm glad.
But when I come back, you know, I got 9 million things to catch up on because I will have at that point checked out of my real life for 2 weeks. I had a whole week of StarCast, and now a week of vacation. So if you just go missing for 2 weeks. You know, you're going to have a lot to catch up on when you come home.
And then before you know it, you get StarCast 3. It's a whole thing.
Oh, don't put that on me. Come on. Give me a break.
I would literally bet $1,000 you're doing one. Like, there's just no doubt. It's just like, because you do it well. You're going to do it. Plus, I'm just going to be angling to get on it as well. So,
let me say, if I'm dumb enough to do a third one, you're in. How's that
yes,
sound?
Yes, there we go. Yes. Ewan Jardin, actually, I've left this for last because I think it's a really good question. He asks, do you think the podcast bubble will ever burst? And I think what I found interesting about that question is that you said earlier on that your shows are kind of based on nostalgia. Do you think that will ever burst, or is it a case of bringing in stuff that's more current? How do you think about that?
No, nostalgia will never burst. You know, it just won't. So if you're 35, you love, you know, what happened in 1990. If you're 25, you love what happened in 2000. If you're 15, you love what happened in 2010. So there will always be something for you to turn back and look at and appreciate in an audience there for that nostalgia. I don't know why that is. I just know that we all sort of grow up loving. I have a 10-year theory. I think the first 10 years you watch wrestling, those are going to be your favorite years. But I think that applies for television, for movies, for music, like, there is an era of music that your family listens to, your parents listen to, because that's what reminds them of quote unquote, back in my day, that type of thing. And I think that will always be there, but yes, the internet, the podcast bubble has already burst. You see a lot of shows that were around that aren't anywhere to be found now. And those podcasts were the podcasts that really felt like if you build it, they will come. And you've seen the podcast where yes, they're cranking out content, but it's content you don't care about. And you know, we don't have to name any names. You know who that is. And you see who the guests are, what the topic is. And you say, I don't want to listen to that. when you develop a really rabid fan base and you have your finger on the pulse of what they want, they're going to listen every week. You become part of their week, the fabric of their life. But when it's something where the content is not consistent and they're just meeting their contractual obligation and putting out a new show every week, but it's not really what you want to hear, it's what they wanted to do, that doesn't work. The number one piece of advice I'd have for someone listening for podcasting is what you want doesn't matter. That's what the audience wants. You've got to create something that you think people want to listen to. So as the content creator, if you want to do it as a creator, that's not the right reason to do it. As the content creator, if you want to do it because you want to hear it as a fan, that will work. But if it's not something you want as a fan, other fans aren't going to want it. It's just not going to work. So I think the bubble's already burst. I don't want to disparage any other podcast, but you could figure out, you know, who was podcasting and who's not now. Those bubbles have burst, and they burst because, you know, they just milked as much as they could out of the advertisers, and now they're gone. The downloads are not consistent and their advertisers didn't get a return. The money dried up. And then they said, well, if this doesn't pay, I don't want to do it. My commitment is even if it didn't pay, I would still be doing this because the first 8 months I did it, I didn't make a dollar.
It's a great point. You know, for us, you know, for Inside the Ropes, we're not like a, we're fans talking about wrestling for the most part. We have interviews and stuff like that. And we might only have, you know, a few thousand listening a week as opposed to the 400,000 that you guys have. But I think what's cool about it is, you know, we get messages, I'm sure you do too, about, I've had people say they're, you know, we had someone whose brother died in the Manchester bomb attacks. Somebody who lost their parents, somebody who's, you know, all these different things, and they say that we got them through. And I think if you can do that and you can have that and have thousands of people want to listen to you every week, it's a testament. So for your friend who's thinking about starting it, the thing that's difficult is that if you're going to do a podcast that is a fan podcast, you're fighting such an uphill battle right now because there's so many of them. You know, if we started Inside the Ropes right now, I don't know if we'd be able to do it and be successful, but it's hard. But like Conrad says, if you can find something people want to listen to, you know, with a good start. So, Conrad, give us your plugs for everything that your shows, StarCast, all that kind of stuff, just in case anyone lives under a rock and they don't know any of the information.
Well, I can't recommend the new podcast with JR enough. That's going to be coming out every Thursday at 6 a.m. It will be called Grilling JR on the feed. Right now, we're still utilizing his old feed because it made more sense than starting over from absolute scratch. In the meantime, look up the Jim Ross Report. It's Thursdays at 6 a.m. Of course, the main event is Fridays at noon, and that's Eastern time, of course. Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Monday morning, it's all about 83 weeks with Eric Bischoff at 6 a.m. Eastern. And then, of course, on Wednesday, we drop What Happened When with Tony Schiavone. And each show is a little different. Tony Schiavone is usually a watch-along where you'll fire up the WWE Network, and we'll talk about silly stuff. Eric Bischoff tells the tales of WCW from the top. And of course, Bruce Pritchard is going to make us laugh about all the old WWF stuff and WWE stuff. And Jim Ross, man, he's been everywhere. So it's going to be interesting to see what we tackle. Our first episode was all about his transition from WCW to the WWF and specifically WrestleMania 9 and the backstory, the part that you hadn't heard of that story about what was going on in JR's real life. I thought it made for a fascinating show and I hope you dig it too. But the real reason we're here, I suppose, is to talk about StarCast. It's coming up at the end of the month, Memorial Day weekend, May 23rd through the 26th, Las Vegas, Caesars Palace. If you can't make it across the pond and check it out, you can enjoy it anywhere you have Wi-Fi at StarCastOnFight.com. More than two dozen live shows, including a sit-down with Cody and the Young Bucks to talk about how in the world Double or Nothing and All Elite Wrestling became a thing. And then we've got a fun panel with Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat and JR, where they're going to watch their historic match from Chicago in 1989, do like alternate commentary on that, and then talk about their famous trilogy and feud that really put 1989 on the map as one of a lot of wrestling fans' favorite years. And that's just day one. We keep it going for Friday, for Saturday, for Sunday. And one of the big things I'm looking forward to on Sunday, of course, is Inside the Ropes with Dustin Rhodes and Kenny McIntosh, something that has never been seen in America. I mean, obviously you guys did a tremendous tour in the UK, but the idea that you've got a capacity crowd at Caesar's Palace one day after Double or Nothing, and it's sort of the rebirth of Dustin Rhodes after, you know, decades as this Goldust character, it's going to be a pretty special day. You can check out all these shows for one low price, just $59 at StarCastOnFight.com.
And finally, give your Twitter handle out in case people don't know it.
Hey, it's Conrad. I start every show and even my radio commercials for my mortgage company by saying, hey, it's Conrad Thompson. And that's my Twitter handle. Hey, it's Conrad on Twitter.
And the good thing is, if you compliment him, he probably will retweet you. So it's worth doing because you're going to get more eyeballs on you.
Yes. If you compliment me, you will get a like or a retweet. And if you shit on me, you will also get a like or a retweet. If you're tagging me, I will see it. And eventually I will give you a like or a retweet.
Well, Conrad, I want to thank you so much for everything that you do. And I'm looking forward to hopefully having a beer with you in Vegas if you have some time. But please try and have at least a couple of hours of rest a day if you can amongst the chaos.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm looking forward to hanging out in Vegas, man.
Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon.